Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. Today our topic is game-based learning. I hope you will enjoy your listening with us. Here we have Yuna from South Korea, Irini from Greece, and Marie from Georgia.
Thank you for introducing us, Aibanu. So let's move on. So Marie, what is exactly game-based learning?
The use of play in educational context and use these words and term game-based learning is definitely new phenomenon. And educational community has begun to explore that games are actually really effective. So they decided to use it as a learning tool. And they came up with two different ways of utilizing games for education. And these two main directions are gamification and serious games. So let's define this. What does gamification and serious games mean? Gamification is a way to use game elements to learn, but without the entertainment value. Gamification strives to take best parts of video games, such as awards, badges, and so forth, and apply them to pedagogy. On the other hand, serious games are meant to provide training and practice without entertaining, whereas gamification uses game-like features, such as points, and similar to serious games, are not meant to entertain. Well, one more thing about serious games is that they have also been created to educate, but in a different way. Serious games are used to practice, train, and provide solutions, so it's more common to use serious game in the training setting. Many different versions of serious game exist right now, and some are meant to make boring everyday tasks a bit more interesting.
Okay, so I think many people mix the meaning of video games and game-based learning. And it is obvious because this is a fast-growing and popular industry among people. For example, well, in 2015, the overall revenue from the video game industry, including hardware, software, mobile, or PC games, it sums approximately $115 billion. So why is game-based learning so appealing?
Well, because it's by no means so engaging for everyone, and there can be many reasons why it happens. So one of those can be the theory of perceptual control, which says that people's behavior is purposeful and that they compare their existing experiences to their desired experiences and take the appropriate actions in order to gain the experience that they prefer.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mari, because there is another theory that is related to game-based learning, and it's called the flow theory that was introduced by Csikszentmihalyi in 1975. And it states that games are designed to generate a positive effect on players and are most successful and engaging when they facilitate the flow experience. So the scholar introduced the flow state through the study of people involved in activities such as rock climbing, chess, and dance. So flow is described as a state of complete absorption or engagement in an activity and refers to the optimal experience. During optimal experience, a person is in a psychological state where he or she is so involved with the goal-driven activity that nothing else seems to matter. Past research has shown that the flow state has positive impact on learning and should be taken into account when designing digital or no learning materials.
So that sounds really relevant to psychological dimensions of games. So what are the main features of it?
That's true, you know, games are a really complex genre of learning environment that cannot be understood by taking only one perspective of learning. For example, psychologists have long acknowledged that the importance of play in cognitive development and learning. For example, Piaget described that play as being an integral tool and evolving with children's stages of cognitive development. One way that play is seen as contributing to children's cognitive development is by activating their schemes in ways that allow children to transcend their immediate reality. So how it looks like is that, for example, a child can pretend that she or he is in the car, while fully knowing that it's not, there is no car at all. So it helps imagination as well.
Ah, so it still has some entertaining and interesting features. And is that what you're saying that encourages learners to learn more?
Yes, motivation is an important feature of game-based learning. Games for entertainment have been shown to be able to motivate learners to stay engaged over longer periods through a series of game features that are of a motivational nature. These features include incentive structures such as stars, points, awards, etc.
So this motivation leads learners to be more engaged in the process, right? As it allows learners to be part of the learning process?
Yes, and engagement is another important feature of game-based learning. For example, a game can engage the learner behaviorally by using gestures as input or inviting players to perform specific physical actions as part of the play. Game characters engage the learner emotionally, and social features such as collaborative support, social cultural engagement, etc. A motivational approach to game-based learning emphasizes that games are able to engage and motivate players by providing experiences that they enjoy and want to continue.
So now let's discuss a different genre of games, which is the video games. So Irini, what is exactly video games?
Well, video games have become a cultural staple of youth media since home consoles became popular in the 1980s. According to industry statistics, video games continue to increase in popularity, with 155 million Americans playing video games for at least 3 hours a week in 2015. But despite the entertainment value that this medium brings, it also brings with it a storm of controversy, particularly from the distribution of violent video games and debates regarding their perceived influence on minors. This controversy has become entrenched with scholarly debates about increasing aggressive behavior. This controversy continued when, in 2015, the American Psychological Association announced their new policy statement, concluding that video games are linked to the development of aggressive behaviors. Overall, academic opinion on the potential effect has not reached a consensus, with scholars still debating these issues.
Although video game playing is totally becoming increasingly common as a hobby, so older generations tend to have less experience playing video games. So according to the statistic, the average age of gamers is 35 years old, suggesting that games are not merely the province of youth and young adults. However, prevalence figures for game playing among older adults, for example, more than 50 years old, specifically are not widely available. So there's a poll, which is by 2013 Harris poll. They revealed the generational gaps in video game knowledge. So although 51% of young adults between 18 to 35 were knowledgeable about the entertainment software ratings board ratings of video games in the US, only 12% of adults over the age of 67 were familiar with these ratings. So this database provides some clue regarding a generational difference when they exposed to commercial video games.
So it sounds like that this relationship between negative attitudes toward youth and negative attitudes toward games is intriguing.
These generational divides appear to have some relationship with attitudes towards video games. For example, Przybylski showed those who never or almost never played electronic games were nearly twice as likely to report endorsing beliefs that video game violence is associated with associator violence. Older Americans were between 4 and 6 times more likely to believe that electronic games contributed to human aggression compared to young adults.
So it sounds like that this relationship between negative attitudes toward youth and negative attitudes toward games is intriguing.
Yeah, and there is actually evidence that exposure both to youth and to games can reduce stress among older adults. Chua et al. Found that older adult intergroup anxiety toward youth was reduced after an interaction between young and elderly participants. Interestingly, playing video games was far more impactful on reducing anxiety towards members of different generations than the non-video game related activity. There was also a more significant positive change in general attitude towards the other age group when playing video games together. There were also a significant positive change in interpersonal attraction between the young and the old participant who enjoyed playing video games together. This study provides some evidence that intergenerational fears can be reduced through shared game activities. But what of negative activities towards game themselves? According to moral panic theory from Bowman, 2016, the perceptions of older adults oftentimes drive discussions of and negative attitudes towards new media, and these perceptions can have an influence on scholarship regarding new media. In prior research, Ivory and Kaliaraman indicated that negative attitudes toward video games often occupy an abstract space. That is to say, people oftentimes seem to worry about violent video games as an abstract comment, but when considering the content of a specific game, worry much less about the specific game. Just as with younger adults, older adults appear to be more concerned about the abstract concept of violent video games, or even just video games, than they worry about a specific video game that they actually played, even if that one is M-rated, which means that it has mature content. This supports the general notion that concerns about video games, at least in part, are driven by unfamiliarity with the medium.
I agree, Irini, and it is undeniable that the depiction of old age in Western society is frequently accompanied in popular culture by negatively connoted biological imagery. Aging is often framed as undesirable, old age as a problem. Others see old age as disease, sometimes something that needs to be cured, or as a failure that needs to be controlled through technology. Aging is a result of an unnecessary failure technically to control a biological process. This is how Vincent describes it. Another scholar, Woodward, highlights another theme of ages when she identifies a pedagogy of mortification to teach an older woman to recede into invisibility. While she speaks of ages against women specifically, it is not difficult to imagine that similar demands be made on elders of other genders. These are problematic views of age and aging, but discrimination occurs in many other aspects of social life, as we know. People may be discriminating against because of their gender, race, class, religious belief, disabilities, looks, language abilities, etc. In the last two decades, more and more scholars have come to approach these aspects of social life and their relationship to one another from an intersectional perspective. Intersectionality is a term coined by the scholar Crenshaw, which offers a way of mediating the tension between assertion of multiple identities and the ongoing necessity of group politics.
So, how would you connect these video games or others to game-based learning?
So, at the core of digital games lies a powerful form of interaction, something that Zimmerman identifies as explicit interactivity, or participation with designed choices and procedures, which is an umbrella term for choices, random events, dynamic simulations, and other procedures programmed into the interactive experience. Digital games harbor enormous potential for enabling learning processes because of their interactive nature. They allow for interactive role reversals and generally provide players with a high degree of agency, both of which may contribute to diffusing processes of victimization, vilification, stereotyping, and discrimination. Specifically, regarding the educational benefits of digital games, in the last two decades, digital game-based learning has come to be seen by a significant number of scholars as offering powerful learning opportunities. Digital games are part of a solution to this problem of dealing with school systems that are not sympathetic to teachers who de-emphasize memorization and competition in favor of developing new interpretations of reality and continued self-actualization. Many digital games approach learning and repetition from the opposite direction, regularly and actively rewarding players for their accomplishments. For example, with high score lists, achievements, trophies, extra rewards for players who level up, and maybe complete optional objectives or succeed in difficult to perform actions.
Okay, so a number of games provide fertile learning environments for learners, or as Scholar G said it, a good video game often operates within but at the outer edge of the learner's resources, so that at many points the game is felt as challenging but not undoable. As a result, such games encourage player agency and foster curiosity. When Barb said, asserted that autonomous inquiry is preferable over rote memorization, when they state that learners learn best when the learning process involves an inquiry, as opposed to the memorization of the facts and principles that are generated from someone else's inquiry. In addition, young players and learners today grow up as digital natives, so digital games arguably speak their language more than more traditional media.
So, you know, after overviewing so many different theories, it might sound really complex for listeners. Would you like to share any examples of game-based learning for adults and share about them?
Okay, sure. So there are two main streams of using game-based learning, on-site and online cases. So let's say on-site examples first. This is called big games, referring to as street games or in some variations as ubiquitous games and pervasive games, combine some forms of real-life experiences with game elements and digital technologies. So once I worked in Jikji International Festival Organizing Committee, which is celebrating and meaning the World Document Heritage Jikji, we wanted to bring all the visitors enjoy each inch of the city in the memory of Jikji. So by combining gaming and touring, we imagined a new kind of a city travel, where travelers, including visitors and citizens, can actively participate in fulfilling the potential of the city. So our proposed platform, Big Game, would allow for hundreds of players to collectively play and interact with urban design, which is a platform that travelers enjoy every nook and the corner in the city when city dwellers design the game.
Oh, that sounds really, really interesting. So how much do citizens engage in building this Big Game?
So by bringing in local citizens to help propose and test ideas for Big Game, user experience becomes a resource available to designers. So a citizen can contribute knowledge about an area's special events, history, important sites, key features, and ultimately will be the users of the proposer. When they come up with a specific mission, for example, the market, house with historical backgrounds, business, etc., etc., so they should include the four components of gamification: fun, storytelling, reward, and social relationship, which is all we mentioned above. Through this process, all citizens become an equal shareholder to the proposed ideas and create a communal investment towards the Big Game in the future. The traditional method of proposer and public debate shifts towards a platform that is engaging and encourages a collective effort to improve cities.
Well, so the ultimate goal of the system is to develop a game where dwelling citizens could propose and design ideas that would directly affect the city and see collective results of their work as they participate. You might expect that adults, tourists, not only visit and see sightseeing in the city, but also look into deeply how this city goes on.
Oh yes, we did, definitely. So it was such an interesting experience to see how we gained attention from game communities for their implications to the games and their reinterpretation of urban spaces. So initially, designing big games is no different than designing video games or board games, as both require rapid prototyping and iterative process. However, the utilization of the city spaces and tour packages call for additional knowledge and methodologies. In addition, designing a flexible game for possible game time alterations that contribute to unexpected location changes, weather, people and other various local conditions and situations are critical.
So both networks utilize a system of user-based idea submissions, centralized databases of information, and provides a devoted community that makes suggestions on how to further improve the proposed designs. With 2012 TED Prize looking for new ideas on City 2.0, this combination of gaming, crowdsourcing and local participation were the perfect storm to start a revolution in urban design to create a new active populace of passionate urban citizens. Games like World of Warcraft give players the means to save worlds and incentive to learn the habits of heroes. What if we could harness this game power to solve real-world problems? Let's listen some clips of Jane McGonigal talking about gamification on TED.
They had half the civilization go off in search of a new world. So that's where I get my 21 billion hours a week of gameplay from. Let's get half of us to agree to spend an hour a day playing games until we solve real-world problems. Now, I know you're asking, how are we going to solve real-world problems in games? Well, that's what I have devoted my work to over the past few years at the Institute for the Future. We have this banner in our offices in Palo Alto, and it expresses our view of how we should try to relate to the future. But in our game, instead of just having five people on the dream team, we said everybody's on the dream team, and it's your job to invent the future of energy, the future of food, the future of health, the future of security, and the future of the social safety net. We had 8,000 people play that game for 8 weeks. They came up with 500 insanely creative solutions that you can go online if you Google Superstruct and see. So finally, the last game. We're launching it March 3rd. This is a game done with the World Bank Institute. If you complete the game, you will be certified by the World Bank Institute as a social innovator, class of 2010, working with universities all over sub-Saharan Africa, and we are inviting them to learn social innovation skills. We've got a graphic novel, we've got leveling up in skills like local insight, knowledge networking, sustainability, vision, and resourcefulness. I would like to invite all of you to please share this game with young people anywhere in the world, particularly in developing areas, who might benefit from coming together to try to start to imagine their own social enterprises to save the world. So I'm going to wrap up now. I want to ask a question. What do you think happens next? We've got all these amazing gamers. We've got these games that are kind of pilots of what we might do, but none of them have saved the real world yet. Well, I hope that you will agree with me that gamers are a human resource that we can use to do real-world work, that games are a powerful platform for change. We have all these amazing superpowers, blissful productivity, the ability to weave a tight social fabric, this feeling of urgent optimism and the desire for epic meaning. I really hope that we can come together to play games that matter, to survive on this planet for another century, and that's my hope that you will join me in making and playing games like this.
So what we heard now is that her game World Insights explained and improved the way we learn, work, solve problems, and lead our lives. Sounds really reasonable. And now I want to let's move on to the examples of sustainability and characteristics on gamification. So Yuna, there is an interesting example of environmental gamification. Would you like to share some of that?
Yes, I would like to share one of the startups in Korea cases. So we all know deforestation is an alarming issue because of global warming. So this is very responsible for 50% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Therefore, planting new trees and forests is important for maintaining the natural balance, but not so many people are taking action. So Tree Planet, South Korea startup, has developed a mobile game about trees, within game purchases and advertising revenues being spent on planting trees in real life. So since its launch in 2010, Tree Planet has planted more than 400,000 trees in 10 countries.
So what makes South Korea's startup interested in addressing this climate change?
So until recently, the only environmental issue that concerned Koreans was the country's recurring fine dust that affects their daily lives. So Western countries are more in tune with the overarching climate change ideas because of disasters like Chernobyl or major floods that show how environmental issues can affect people's livelihoods. No such environmental crisis has affected Korea as deeply. But currently, the conversation about climate change in South Korea is growing at a rapid pace. People are no longer grumbling only about the fine dust that plagues the city every spring. On top of the controversy over the U.S. leaving the Paris Climate Agreement, the new president Moon Jae-in has set an aggressive agenda to meet the country's Paris goal to lower emissions by 37% of business as usual levels by 2030.
So how does this game work, and is there any roles of participants?
Oh yes, so smartphone users can grow their own virtual baby trees with the proceeds from in-app purchases going to forestation projects. It also brought storytelling into the mix and harnessing K-pop star favor to let fans around the world donate a star forest to their favorite celebrity. So having people inadvertently adopt real trees, thus giving them ownership over the issues, helped them to think about their trees' well-being. So now the company is partnering with Seoul City to dedicate trees along the Seoul Sky Park through individual subscriptions, and the proceeds are being used to plant 3.8 million trees over a landfill in Incheon, west of Seoul.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous. Setting out to raise funds to plant trees, the startup seems to have more creative and gamified the experience. I would like to download this application as well. I wish I could see how my trees could be part of forest in the future. Thank you so much, Yuna, for your research.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Talking Ads. This is the end of our program for today. Goodbye and see you next time.